Hi, this is Kevin Barrett of Truth Jihad Radio saying, you have my life in your hands. Please subscribe to Truth Jihad Radio and keep these shows coming. Go to www.truthjihad.com and sign up now. That's truthjihad.com.
I can't live without you, baby. And I find there's no way out.
How could I not meet you?
Welcome to Truth Jihad Radio. I'm Kevin Barrett, your Truth Jihadi, bringing you all the important information I can find that's being left out of the corporate-controlled mainstream, and bringing on great guests who tell it exactly the way they see it. Well, my guest today, James Tracy, is carrying on the great tradition of speaking truth to power in the academy like nobody else. You know, we have a few folks out there doing good work. Lance DeHaven Smith is still teaching, I believe. And, you know, there's some others. Mickey Huff out in California. And I could go on for a while, but not very long while. But James Tracy, I think, is kind of taking it to the next level, not even trying to pretend to be neutral and kind of timid in public pronouncements like so many people do. He's just calling it exactly the way he sees it. And freaking out a bunch of his colleagues in the process. And I love it. This is what everybody should be doing, but hardly anybody has the guts to do. So welcome, Jim. How are you?
Kevin, doing well. And, you know, desperate times deserve desperate measures.
Yeah, they sure do. That's my conclusion as well. So the world is getting crazier than ever, it seems. We have more false flags left, right, and center, Islamophobia being whipped up in an unprecedented scale, vastly worse than even after 9/11, by folks like Pam Geller, whose colleague Rita Katz, the fellow Mossad agent, is the public relations department for ISIS. Can't make this stuff up. And then the Jade Helm scare is ongoing, and, you know, I don't know. We'll have to get into that. I'm not sure there's actual preparations for a crackdown this summer, but I certainly agree it's ominous. Mm-hmm. And you're sitting there on your perch down at a certain university in Florida whose name must not be mentioned, taking it all in. Where should we start?
Well, it's up to you. I suppose we could talk about Jade Helm. We could talk about academe, any number of things.
Let's talk about the theme of like closing down borders and turning society into a sort of prison, both at the mental and perhaps the physical levels. I just got stopped at the border in Detroit, crossing over into Canada. And they wouldn't let me into Canada to do a couple of talks I had scheduled. One of those talks was being attacked by the Canadian defense minister. I'm sure that it probably wasn't the most popular event, and I'm probably not the most popular person. But still, in the past, countries like Canada, like the U.S., are supposed to defend free speech. And you wouldn't think that they would lock you out of the country, but that's exactly what they did on a bizarre pretext. Bringing up an alleged FBI report that included all kinds of false and, in some cases, totally bizarre information. And there's, of course, no way to refute it. I can't prove that I was not arrested for felony drug dealing in 1977. So, hey, I guess I can't. Well, I can prove it later, but I couldn't prove it in time to get over there for the conference. So, yeah, Jim, what's going on?
They didn't want you to sell the several dozen books you had.
I guess that's it. Yeah. Yeah. This We Are Not Charlie Hebdo book seems to be a hot potato.
It's like you were making fun of that Charlie Hebdo event or somehow analyzing it in ways that you probably should not have.
Yeah, well, it wasn't just me. You know, I had a whole lot of people, 20 leading public intellectuals.
It's an impressive work, by the way, and you should be proud. Did the border guards take a chance to read any of the chapters?
Well, I actually asked the American border guards that. See, first I had to deal with the Canadians, and I was stuck 2 hours going through that Alice in Wonderland experience, or Kafka, I guess, would maybe be more like it. I didn't quite know what I was on trial for, and how am I going to prove I wasn't arrested for selling drugs in June of 1977? So then I got sent back to the U.S., and there again I got detained and totally searched. They took apart my whole car again. And there, the guards were making some remarks about the book title, especially Truth Jihad. They saw I had a couple of copies of Truth Jihad. Said, oh, this looks like the kind of thing we should be interested in. Tell us about this book.
What was your elevator speech on the book?
What did I tell him? It's a 9/11 truth thing. You know, I discovered 9/11 was an inside job back in 2003, so I've been working on that issue and so on and so forth. And they said, well, we're not supposed to be taking political stances here. I had to go into the waiting room, and they were left with my van for an hour, just like the Canadians. So both the Canadians and the Americans had access to my laptop. They wouldn't let me take the laptop out of the van, so they both had access to the laptop for an hour each. When I got back to the van on the American side, the American border guards made some remarks about the book. And what did they say about that Charlie Hebdo book? They were kind of, you know, snidely referring to it, but with a certain curiosity. And one of the last things the American border guard said to me was, well, you know, I guess we have to let you back in. As if he was somewhat reluctant. So I came pretty close to being locked on that bridge, the Ambassador Bridge between Detroit and Canada, for the rest of my life, like some of these people have been stuck in airports.
In airports, right. Yeah, I thought the objective was to keep us in, right? To keep us in the behind the gates, as it were, or in the police state. But then you go up north and it's not that much different.
You know, I can't tell whether they want us in or out. I think they just want to control all of the crossings. They want to be able to lock us down wherever we may be, lock us into their paradigms, lock us into their geographical spaces. You cross a border, and then they erect their authoritarian symbols. They don't want you crossing that border. You know, like with this Jade Helm issue, I am not certain that the American authorities are all that desperate to keep people like me in this country. As that border guard said, they probably would rather that I were somewhere else. But they're such power freaks that maybe they would lock down the border in that direction. And what do you think?
That's a possibility. But with regard to this particular situation, you also said that I was reading the article last night, and you said one of the guards freaked out because apparently you had not divulged the fact that you had books, and that was a big deal.
Well, that was the pretense, but my sense is that this was a hostile interrogation. They knew who I was. Mm-hmm. They were directed. This person who stopped me, as soon as she ran my passport, she just went berserk on me. And it was, you know, it was like, you know, being interrogated by some kind of authoritarian police state person. Just a string of sort of non sequitur questions, hostile. Repeating my answers in this hostile and sarcastic way, jumping from thing to thing, you know, why didn't you tell me this before? Well, you didn't ask. Or, and that's what she did with the books. You know, she asked what I have in the van, and so I'm telling her these things, and she's interrupting me and mocking me. And when I finally get to, and I have these books, how many books? You know, well, 75 or 100. Why didn't you tell me about the books? Well, we didn't get it. You interrupted. But then, you know, that was the excuse to send me over for the search. But my sense was that they ran the passport. They found something that came up on the computer record saying, give this guy the once-over. And they did.
Yeah. Yeah, I was up there. And I remember the good old days when you just needed a driver's license, right?
Yeah.
I was up there last summer and drove over as you did. But this was in upstate New York. And I went through without any problem, you know, of course, the routine questions, where you're going and all that. But other than that, it was glitch free. But who knows? My goodness, they might be able to fabricate one of these FBI reports on me next time I go up.
Well, you know, you might very well be on their list. I would think so.
Kind of disappointed. Run my passport again? Come on.
Yeah. Well, I've been into Canada many times in the last several years. I've gone to three different 9/11 truth conferences since 2008, most recently in 2012. And I crossed over less than 2 years ago to drive all the way across Canada on the way to New Hampshire, and had no problem at any of these crossings. On a couple of them, they actually, you know, pulled me aside and did the, you know, did the routine, pulled up an FBI printout of my supposed record, and there was nothing on it that was a barrier to my entry into Canada. And the only things that were different about this particular alleged FBI printout were a couple of these weird bogus things from way back in the day that shouldn't matter anyway. You know, these at least two or three pieces of completely false information, including, you know, the worst one being a supposed felony drug dealing arrest. And that stuff wasn't on there last time I crossed into Canada. But this was all like stuff back in the 70s. So, and that's not supposed to have any effect on whether they let you in. So I'm totally confused about why they let me in repeatedly over the past several years. And nothing has changed, as far as I know. I think it must be the Charlie Hebdo book.
Could very well be. You are definitely on their radar now for questioning that event and actually getting a whole group of more than capable individuals to do the same.
Yeah, I suppose France will probably treat me pretty badly at their border, too, if I try to do a book talk there.
I would. The whole EU.
Yeah, that's right. It's all getting locked down. And the president of France says that they need to stop conspiracy theories by outlawing them at the French, European, and international levels and cracking down on internet service providers who give a voice to people like us.
That's right. And, you know, the United States is one step away, I think, from very similar types of measures, types of laws.
Yeah, it makes you wonder whether there's some sort of hidden reason for this. Do you think this is all a sort of a neocon power grab strategy where they are demonizing certain groups and using that to grab power, and they just want to keep that process going? Or are they preparing for something really bad, like total economic collapse?
Well, if you look at some of corners in the alternative media and this discussion concerning Jade Helm, it would appear to be the latter, perhaps. But, you know, we've been talking about, I think that this has kind of been discussed, it's characterized the discourse of the alternative media for several years now, an economic collapse. And who knows how long really the powers that be can actually, allow this, or rather somehow keep it going for another 5 or 10 years, their, you know, series of Ponzi schemes. We simply don't know. But the alternative media as well is kind of an industry to a certain degree unto itself. You know, there is, there are various businesses, they make an existence for themselves, so to speak, selling various goods, to be prepared, you know, the preparedness industry and all that. So I could see that element of it. Perhaps Jade Helm is another facet of that. But there are also some, you know, kind of disturbing things about this military exercise. I've written a bit about, and you think about the backdrop to this, the fact that, you know, there was the establishment of NORTHCOM under the Bush administration. And, this is intended to oversee the deployment, the active duty of troops in the United States. It coordinates with the CIA. With the NSA, other civilian intelligence agencies. There's the purging of the military that's taken place the past couple of years, which is also of concern. The 2012 National Defense Authorization Act, executive orders by the Obama administration allowing him to pretty much take over everything, just about everything, including things in our possession, such as food and what have you. There's the federalization of the police that's gone on since the Clinton administration, as well as, of course, I know that you're aware of the 10-3-3 program that's militarized our police to a significant degree. So all these things constitute a kind of backdrop that is very concerning when you consider Jade Helm itself. And you think about the fact that our government, as I'm sure you're well aware, Kevin, carried out the program back in between the mid-1960s, early 1970s in Vietnam called the Phoenix Program. And this was something that used special operations soldiers in coordination with the Central Intelligence Agency to essentially do decapitation raids and ferret out the Viet Cong or would-be Viet Cong supporters, and do that in a way to assuage public opinion so as not to upset the broader public in South Vietnam at the time.
It's a heck of a way to win hearts and minds, go in and murder people.
Right. That was a way to circumvent any sort of public relations disaster, these sorts of things that previous types of tactics that were being used actually were not very good in terms of really cultivating public opinion there.
Yeah, they've done that in other places too, in different ways. Indonesia might be the worst, actually. They killed over 1 million people. The CIA basically set it all up and drew up the list of dissidents for their Indonesian stooges to go out and round up. This was in 1965.
Yeah.
And they ended up torturing people to death, getting lists of names as they tortured the people and going out and rounding those people up and then torturing them to death. Your tax money at work.
And you're so, right. Yeah. That's a very good point. That was actually far greater, the campaign to essentially dismantle the Sukarno regime. And of course that was done by people who were the sort of antecedents to the present commander in chief that we have, including mm-hmm. Obama's mother and
his parents were over there working for the very people who were doing this,
the Ford Foundation and so forth. Yeah. So that's really quite disturbing, and the ruthlessness of that campaign. Yeah, that's a very good point.
Right. And some people, of course, if once they admit that this actually happened, would say, well, they wouldn't do that to Americans. But, you know, that's kind of what we thought before 9/11, that mm-hmm. if they would go and bomb thousands of people to smithereens, that probably wouldn't happen in the United States. Well, it did on September 11th, 2001. So
exactly.
You can't put anything past them.
I know. That's another thing that I was kind of thinking about today and kind of preparing for this discussion. What makes us that different from Syria or from Libya or Afghanistan in the eyes of the transnationalists, in the eyes of the global power elite? In fact, we are probably perceived as being more pesky because of that nasty document called the Constitution.
That's right. Yeah, the American middle class probably is the ultimate barrier to this New World Order plan to turn the whole world into kind of a third world plantation with themselves running the show without interference from the peons. Mm-hmm. Some folks tell us that they expect to reduce the population of peons since so many of us are becoming useless eaters. That all, I think, is a very real kind of concern and a realistic paradigm. With the Jade Helm thing, you know, the question would be, to what extent is this coming down from the American administration per se, or is it coming down from some other faction? Is its purpose to incite martial law now, or is it maybe a kind of a false flag to study reactions to this kind of news in the alternative community? Mm-hmm. Is it possibly designed to inject fear into the discourse? Because I do think that fearful thinking is paralyzing. And I think I've probably reacted a little bit against this Jade Helm fear-mongering precisely because some of it is coming from people who have a kind of a fearful and aggressive style. You know, Alex Jones, who's a genius at what he does, don't get me wrong, I have a lot of admiration for his skill. And my good friend Jim Fetzer, even sometimes. These people get, they're brilliant speakers, but they get so carried away with this kind of, vibe of fear and kind of hostility that it sounds to me like, that vibe is going to actually make people less able to calmly figure out what's going on and react appropriately. I do think that the level of fear and anxiety in the truth community has been one of the big factors paralyzing us and preventing us from being more effective. So there are these kinds of concerns I have, even though I think the larger issues that you're talking about are very, very real and need to be addressed. And then there's the question of which faction is doing what. And this is where the fight between Jim Fetzer and Gordon Duff really turned on, where Gordon would argue that this New World Order faction, which what it really is a kind of a bunch of Zionist banksters, other global, you know, crime families, Bush crime family, tied in very tightly to the Republican Party now here in the U.S. And that this particular faction, which is not the the Obama faction, the Obama faction is the old liberal CIA faction, it's actually the neocon faction that is most dangerous, that's pushing for extreme measures, world war, big war, you know, attack Iran. This is the kind of stuff that actually could lead to martial law. And according to Gordon's view, the more realistic forces around Obama are unlikely to do that. And Gordon thinks that Jade Helm is actually engineered by the neocon faction to achieve its goals. So, I'm willing to entertain and, you know, analyze and listen to all of these views. I had a problem with Jim Fetzer because once he decides what his view is, sometimes it seems he's not really willing to listen to alternative views very carefully anymore. Maybe you can go ahead and tell me what is it that makes it seem likely that you know, what are the worst signs about Jade Helm?
Well, all the ones that I've mentioned, I think, constitute the backdrop, and we can speculate, and that's the best that we can actually do. When you look at these historical antecedents, I think that it is perhaps somewhat more disturbing. One of the things I'm concerned about is Posse Comitatus, and not only that, but people talk much less about the Third Amendment. Which is, of course, you know, protects us from the quartering of troops in our homes. Now we don't. That's something that might seem excessive, and of course, it's something that is way back in the historical memory, in the recesses of history. And yet, we do, in some ways, have troops in the form of militarized police in our communities on a regular basis. And so there's kind of an attenuation of things like the Third Amendment, and that's something I think also that one has to keep in mind when we are considering, you know, Jade Helm, the fact that there are special operations troops involved, and why is that? Special operations, they typically do reconnaissance prior to a large-scale type of operation, right? So that's something that is also a concern in my view. And, you know, the personnel in the military, in their defense, in many cases, they're so compartmentalized, they likely don't know actually what is going on, what they might be asked to do. And perhaps this could be a test to determine what troops actually will go through with particular types of maneuvers, you know, disarmament of the civilian population or something along those lines.
Wouldn't they have to give them orders to disarm somebody to find that out?
That's right. They would. Yes, definitely.
And if that happened, that would be crossing a real threshold, a real red line.
Well, we know that it happened during Hurricane Katrina in New Orleans, and not all of the service personnel that were involved actually complied with that order. But, you know, for example, the Z or what was it at the time, Blackwater, of course, they were involved, I think, with those maneuvers as well, and they certainly did. You know, we have a president as well who sometimes, you know, brags about killing civilians and does not seem to think that there's a great deal of difference between, you know, an enemy combatant and a U.S. citizen, you know, as well as our Justice Departments and our Attorney General, even though they might provide lip service to the contrary. So that's also a certain kind of backdrop of all of this. There was the Bundy Ranch incident that took place a couple of years ago, which is an interesting sort of event to consider, because you had actually kind of an uprising of veterans and the citizenry that were standing opposed to a real show of force by the federal government. And if one thing went wrong there, and if the federal government actually did overstep its bounds in some way, you could have seen that actually escalate to something much larger, to something that might be perhaps a regional confrontation. But I think that those in the the federal government they're testing the waters, and they want to see how far they can push the envelope. Another thing about the fact that you have special operations involved so prominently in this exercise that's a real concern, I think, is the fact that you have them coordinating, as I mentioned before, with regard to the Phoenix program, coordinating with the civilian intelligence agencies. And they say this quite forthrightly in their pronouncements concerning what's going to be taking place. And of course, you know this through studying 9/11 better than anyone, Kevin, the fact that some things do happen when there are drills afoot, when there are, and this thing is going to be taking place, July, August, it's going to be taking place for 3 months. And who knows if something might take place in that 90-day period, when you have these drills going on, frequently it's difficult to distinguish between when a drill is taking place and when it's gone live. Or when there's a pretext or a reason for it to go live. Some people in the alternative media are talking about an incursion of ISIS in coordination with some of the drug cartels, which are themselves militarized to a certain degree. That could be something that might be an event. It could be an economic collapse. We know the economy is very precarious in a number of ways. And that might also precipitate something whereby there'd actually be a crackdown, and you have this drill that is in fact already transpiring. So it'd be a very opportune type of event along the lines, perhaps, of what took place back in October of 1938 with the War of the Worlds broadcast with Orson Welles. Which, whether or not you believe that's something that was premeditated or it was something that was studied by early social psychologists, social scientists concerning the mass media and the extent to which a mass medium could have an influence on a population in reporting a particular disastrous event and how much of that population would actually respond. So I think all these things are important to kind of keep in mind and keep in perspective. But I share your concern that one does not necessarily want to go overboard. And in some ways, if we do, that clouds our ability, it inhibits our ability to actually be able to proceed in a rational way. And to actually think these things through and better recognize and understand their significance. I had listened to a few of the I think there was a broadcast that you and Jim Fetzer did back at the end of April, it seemed like you guys really got into it back then in terms
of. It's become a running rubric. Everybody tunes into False Flag Weekly News now to find out if we're going to, have a big fight about Jade Helm.
It was quite an entertaining exchange. But I think I'm kind of midway between yourself and Jim. I think that it is something that we should be concerned about as well, from what I have, have looked at so far anyway.
Yeah, well, I like directing attention to the underlying issues, the militarization of police, militarization of the country, NORTHCOM, preparations for eventual possible martial law, all that kind of stuff is very important. When I look at each of the sort of component parts of this Jade Helm thing, piece by piece, a lot of times it looks like more smoke than fire to me. Like, for instance, sure, conceivably, like any exercise, this could somehow go live and become a big terror event. But I don't really see how. Like, I mean, I see how on 9/11, drills that moved the planes, the fighter planes out of American airspace and cleared the way and shut down the National Satellite Reconnaissance Center and mocked a plane into building attack that then turned into a real plane into building attack. It's pretty obvious how those drills were used to facilitate 9/11. Likewise with 7/7, when Peter Powers' Visor Consultants was running drills envisioning bombing trains and buses in London, and the very places they were envisioning the bombs going off had actual bombs going off. It's really obvious how those go live. But with Jade Helm, basically, you know, maybe a 1,000-plus soldiers roaming around in these states playing silly games. If they want to stage an ISIS incursion, you know, ISIS shoots up some shopping mall, you know, 5 miles from the Mexican border after they swam across the Rio Grande or something like that. I don't see why they need Jade Helm to do it. It looks to me like Jade Helm is, they may have intentionally leaked those documents that look disturbing on the face of them. You know, red states, blue states, enemy states, you know, Texas and Utah are enemy states and this kind of thing. I mean, if you drew up that document and then you got it leaked to Alex Jones, the result would be predictable. Mm-hmm. And all of this is pretty predictable. It just feels to me like we're being played here.
Well, you may be right. And of course, the techniques and the approaches of Cass Sunstein are still afoot. There are, I think, plenty of individuals in the alternative media that really are agent provocateurs to one degree or another. And that's something that we should also be aware of, keep aware of.
They could be studying us. And I read a piece, which I don't have right in front of me, I'm forgetting the name of the author right now, analyzing the possibility of it being a psyop. And I found that very interesting and somewhat compelling. That it reminded me, actually, of what happened during my peak of research into Charlie Hebdo, when suddenly a very high-quality forgery made the rounds of the Internet. It was a fake BBC report. And it appeared as if the BBC had finally broken its silence on false flags and reported on evidence that Charlie Hebdo was a false flag. And so there I was, my picture was on an apparent BBC report exposing the Charlie Hebdo false flag, or at least raising questions about it.
Uh-huh.
And that was quite interesting. You know, it fooled everybody, because usually these kinds of hoaxes are not that slick and professional. This looked like a real BBC website, and you click the links and you go to BBC places. It was, the video was high production value, sounded just like BBC, looked just like BBC. So somebody put a lot of resources into doing that. And one of the reasons they might have done that was to see what would happen if a major media outlet actually did issue a report exposing a false flag. And they might very well have put out their web crawler spies to look at exactly how people were communicating about this particular link. Who was sharing it on Facebook? Who was emailing it? Who were the people that were interested in it? How did it spread? And that way, if a sensitive piece of information, such as a big mainstream outlet exposing a false flag, ever actually happened, they would know precisely how it was going to spread, or at least pretty close, and then they'd be in a position to deal with it. And likewise with Jade Helm, this is really smoking out the whole, everybody who's concerned about martial law and militarization has been smoked out on this. And they could be watching how people are communicating, how they're reacting, and doing a big study that could be of use to them in the event that someday they actually do decide to impose martial law.
Well, apparently Jade Helm is going to take place this summer, is taking place for over the course of 90 days now, I believe, right, from mid-June until mid-September. But aren't we in a state of, in a perpetual war? This is what we were told, in fact, back in September of 2001. It's never going to end, right?
Mm-hmm.
So, as you point out, what's another drill? It's something that I think, you know, it definitely could be an experiment. I know that after the Boston Marathon bombing, there's some social scientists at UC Irvine and at, I believe, Colorado Boulder, a handful of sociologists who were actually looking at, in live time and then thereafter with the data they had collected, looking at how social media, how that news of the Boston Marathon bombing event traveled through social media. And this was something that was partly funded by the United States military. And I'm quite certain that there were studies that were taking place with Sandy Hook and with Aurora. You know, perhaps some of these other events that are very suspicious. I don't have any proof of that, of studies taking place with those events, but certainly do with the Boston Marathon bombing event. And this is something that is a real buildup, right? It's not something that's just taking place all of a sudden. All of a sudden, it's news. This is something that has been percolating for the past few months in the alternative media.
Right.
So, yeah, that hypothesis does have merit, I think. And I wouldn't put it past them, that's for sure. Either way, whether or not this has substance in terms of actually being a buildup for martial law or for a real a martial law event, I'm sure that it's being studied either way.
Right. One of the tip-offs that makes me suspicious that it's not what it looks like at face value is that some of these items that have been used to fuel the furor in the alternative media, they don't quite have a ring of authenticity. They look to me as if they were sort of manufactured to get the desired effect. In other words, that map that started the whole thing, you know, Alex Jones started, you know, really wailing about that right. map with the red states, the blue states, you know, and the red states were the evil states. Well, that does look like a ploy to excite the red staters, for one thing, but it's also, it just looks, that map looks to me like whoever came up with it maybe was really trying to get that kind of reaction. And likewise, the Walmart thing. You know, I studied rumors, legends, and conspiracy theories for my dissertation. The minor was folklore, and I was studying legends in Morocco, mostly saints, miracle legends, but also some contemporary personal experience narratives of supernatural and extraordinary events. So I did a whole folklore thing on legends, including, you know, rumors and conspiracy theories, quote unquote, are also part of that. And you see these kinds of scare stories about big chains quite frequently in urban legends. For example, in the African-American community, there was an urban legend about Church's fried chicken being full of chemicals that will sterilize you because the white people want to sterilize black people and get rid of them. And of course, literally, that was not true. There really were no such sterilization chemicals in Church's fried chicken. At least we can be reasonably certain that there weren't. But the legend, it hit all the nerves, you know. Church's fried chicken is a fixture in the black community. And the African Americans have been targeted for all sorts of horrible experiments and mistreatment throughout history. Yeah. And African Americans have a good reason to think that a fair number of their white neighbors just kind of wish they would go away. Ever since Lincoln said he wished they would go back to Africa, he wished there was a way to get rid of them. The races will never that was Lincoln, the great emancipator, who said that. So, yeah. You know, the black people have a reason to worry about these things. And so this particular urban legend expressed a sort of underlying truth in symbolic language that was very inflammatory and really connected with people. So they spread it. That's why it spread. It had that Church's fried chicken thing. It was a perfect, you know, a perfect meme to be spread. And that was probably spontaneous. I doubt if some social scientist invented that story to spread it. But they've studied these things. You know, I'm not the only person that studies this stuff in the folklore department. So I wouldn't be surprised if somebody in PSYOPs said, hey, guess what? These conspiracy people, you know, especially the slightly less sophisticated element of, you know, Alex's audience, will really go for this if we say that they're going to lock us all up in tunnels underneath Walmart. You know, it just sounds like that to me. That sounds more likely to me than that there's really likely to be any such thing going on with Walmart. But you know, you took the Walmart stories a little more seriously than that. Tell me about what you found about the Walmart angle.
I did?
Well, I mean, you did in your article that quoted me and said that you actually leaned a little towards Jim's position. You said something about, well, all these Walmarts are closing all at once and they claim it's plumbing problems. And, you know, some people say that there are entrances to deep underground military bases or dumps nearby there. So if you have like credible information around that, you know, let me hear it.
Oh, the article that appeared on Memory Hole blog.
Yeah.
Yeah, that was Jim Perloff's.
Oh, that was Perloff. Okay.
Yeah.
I was thinking that was you.
That was Jim, and he was on my interview program last week, and actually this past Monday, and so I had inquired. I was doing a bit of research in preparation for that discussion. Actually, him and Chris Emery of Fremont Films, because as you likely know, he's involved. He did the screenplay for their latest film, Shadow Ring. And so I think after the interview, we were speaking for a few minutes chatting, and I had brought up Jade Helm in the interview, and then we talked about it for a few minutes thereafter, and I asked if I could post that article to my site, and so I did, and actually it's been quite popular. It's gotten a great many views, but yeah, Jim wrote that.
Yeah, it's a good article, and Jim's a very, very smart guy. Mm-hmm. But with the Walmart thing, it's still, to me, that just doesn't have the ring of truth. It just doesn't sound plausible. It goes off into these kind of speculative areas about the deep underground military bases, and it's hard to find sources on all of that stuff that really convince me that there's a likelihood that they're going to turn Walmarts into concentration camps.
Yeah. I can't take a stance either way concerning that. If there were, I think, possibly mobilization of forces in the United States, then facilities akin to a Walmart or perhaps Walmarts would be very helpful in terms of supply lines.
They're big buildings with all sorts of transport facilities and stuff. So
I don't know about processing centers or anything, but I've heard that perhaps they might be used for supply lines along those lines. But what was I going to say specifically with regard to that?
A related issue is the military convoys. People have been seeing large military convoys.
Yeah. There's a little bit more to that, I think, because a lot of people have they've gotten footage with their iPhones, what have you, and have posted that on YouTube. And there is a lot of movement in some of these some of this footage has also picked up UN vehicles being, going to and fro in the United States, which would suggest, international forces coming in here and doing some sort of policing action, which is of a concern, I think, for probably most anyone. I think part of the motif there is that if you could not get U.S. forces, U.S. servicemen to fire on or disarm the population, then you could probably do that with an international force. And there's also information circulating that these forces are, training on U.S. soil and what have you.
Right. Well, that's been a motif for a long time, like the black helicopter motif that we've heard. A lot of stories about this UN invasion scenario, and I'm a bit skeptical because it seems to me that the American military and the police agencies and Americans in general are quite nationalistic, and I just don't see how any conceivable UN force, considering especially how small and incompetent and useless all known UN forces have pretty much always been, could possibly attempt anything like that.
Yeah. Unless there was some breakdown, if there was some economic breakdown, that's something that could very quickly involve civil unrest. Today, there's no major food stockpile, nationally. Supermarket chains frequently are, it's not a matter that they don't really have a big inventory of food, and it's generally what's on the shelves and that's it. So it wouldn't take very long for those shelves to be cleared out, and then you'd have a certain degree of unrest, and people will be desperate.
That's a good point.
That there's that possibility, and I think it's something that is within the realm of possibility, if not probability, given again the kind of precarious nature of the economy.
Yeah, that's true. If we project long enough into the future, it certainly becomes a probability. There are a lot of scenarios that it does seem likely that a major disaster scenario hitting much, if not all, of the country at once is a fairly high probability, at least if we look at a couple of decades hence. One of the scenarios that I hadn't been aware of until a few years ago was the possibility that sunspots could fry the electrical grid.
Yeah.
And that could melt down nuclear power plants, and we could end up with kind of a thousand Chernobyls and no power for years. And, you know, it's only, you could only imagine how that would be. The economic collapse, the possibility of nuclear war, and there's been a lot of saber rattling with Russia, those sorts of things are certainly concerning. And it does seem to me that the maximal martial law scenario would most likely go with something like that. I can't see them doing a full-scale martial law or even anything remotely close to it just with, you know, having ISIS come and, you know, shoot a few hundred people in a supermarket or something like that.
Right. Well, I'm not sure if we're really aware of the potential of ISIS. We know that it's something that United States intelligence has created. And but to what degree are they actually formidable? That's something we're not really completely aware of.
Yeah, they don't strike me as being formidable at all as an independent force. But if they're working with U.S. intelligence, Turkish, Saudi, Israeli intelligence, then of course they have the capabilities of those intelligence agencies, which is frightening, especially the Israelis, who apparently like to play around with mini nukes. We had credible reports of the Israelis dropping a nuclear weapon on Yemen last week, rather the reports came out last week. Mm-hmm. And you know, that's always a concern. I know that right after 9/11, there was a whole flurry of these stories about how Al-Qaeda might have nuclear weapons. They'd supposedly purchased 50 or more from the Russians, and they were priming the American people so that if a nuclear weapon went off in an American city, that they would blame Al-Qaeda. Now, in retrospect, my interpretation today is that this was a kind of a backup strategy to make sure that the neoconservative coup d'etat succeeded. It was a kind of a threat, making it possible that if any military people or intelligence people were to really push back against the 9/11 coup d'etat, then they could just escalate it to the next level, which is what these neocon Zionists always do. Nuke an American city, blame Al-Qaeda, bring in total martial law. Everybody would go along with that. Everybody would buy it because they read in the New York Times Magazine, one of the many sources that were hyping this BS, that Al-Qaeda had got a hold of nuclear weapons from Russia. So that's the sort of thing that they might do if, you know, we've been primed a little bit for something like that ever since, but nothing like the month or two after 9/11. At that point, there were lots of these stories about Al-Qaeda supposedly getting nukes, lots of stories quoting high-level officials saying they were afraid that there was going to be a fireball over an American city. And I do think that that was a backup strategy to reinforce the 9/11 coup, but that's the sort of thing that they might wheel out again today.
And what's so ironic about that is that Israel is the biggest nuclear superpower in the Middle East.
Right. And according to some of my sources, they're also the most advanced country with miniature and experimental nuclear weapons, ahead of the U.S. even.
That they may very well have deployed in every major city in the world.
Well, that's the old Samson option, I guess.
Yeah.
Bring the house down.
Right.
Yeah. Yeah. You would think they would be willing to come up with some sort of viable way of living with their neighbors without going to that kind of extreme.
Exactly. I think that would be much more productive for everyone involved. For everyone involved.
Right. Well, we're heading into the last 5 minutes here, and let's see. Where should we go from here? How about this wave of Islamophobia? You know, as I see it, we've got a kind of a new theme going in the false flag war on terror sweepstakes. The original thing was, you know, they built up to 9/11 with the pre-9/11 false flags in the African embassies and the USS Cole and the original WTC bombing in 93. So then they do 9/11 as their big event, it's the PR event launching the War on Terror, bringing it out in public. And then they reinforce that. They keep the pot boiling with a bunch of post 9/11 false flags, including Bali, Madrid, 7/7 in London, and so on. Well, now I think they've shifted gears a little bit, and I think Charlie Hebdo represents kind of a new peak event, sort of like 9/11 was. And the theme now is Muslims hate our freedom. That's rehashed from 9/11. And they really hate cartoons. They overreact to cartoon attacks. Nasty, nasty Muslims, you know, must kill more of them. Is kind of the message. And they're repeating this message now with, you know, the false flag in Copenhagen, the Texas one, and now they've staged this big confrontation in Arizona. And who knows where Pam Geller will take her circus next.
I don't know if you happen to see the video of that event actually transpiring. Pam Geller was being interviewed, and we hear all this commotion in the background, and it's really not quite the hysteria one would anticipate. That's just my, you know, just me. I'm not sure if you actually caught that video.
I didn't. Tell me about it.
I actually posted it on one of my sites. Yeah, it just there was this. Once again, this commotion, and apparently these two individuals were assailing the premises, the building, and the camera actually did not shut off. It captured Geller's response, which was essentially, "Oh my," you know, but it was not this, you know, mad rush for the door or anything.
Did she look more surprised than Bush looked when he got that whisper in his ear on 9/11?
Just a wee bit more, yeah.
Well, that's good.
I thought it was rather unusual overall. I want to send you a link of that.
Yeah, I'll have to look at that, because there were some other indications as well that it didn't seem like it was particularly unexpected. You know, these guys show up and they just get shot down. It's like it was scripted.
Whenever these events take place, one has to take them with a grain of salt and look really closely at them. Some of them just seem so contrived. That they're actually put-ons, you know. Now maybe this was genuine, but that's something that we always, I think, have to keep in mind.
Well, my first reaction to Charlie Hebdo was that it was
Charlie Hebdo, as I think so many of the essays in your new book point out.
Yeah, I thought it was real when it first. You know, I just got the initial reports, and it seemed plausible. You know, they managed to build up this, you know, obscene, blasphemous cartoon thing into an issue. And it wouldn't be surprising that out of nearly 2 billion Muslims on Earth, somebody would go and shoot up Charlie Hebdo's offices. That seemed plausible to me.
Yeah.
So they got me.
And the fact that that publication, my understanding is that was purchased by the Rothschilds just 30 or 60 days before.
Well, it turns out that I think I need to correct that, because the article in the Dutch mainstream magazine that reported that, it did sound like it was purchased right before. But I believe that it was actually purchased a few years before. But that's right when Charlie Hebdo started cranking out these over-the-top, blasphemous, pornographic attacks on Islam. Right. The Rothschilds bought it. It was part of this Liberation Consortium. So the Rothschilds bought it, and there was a shakeup. And suddenly Charlie Hebdo turned into this extreme provocateur magazine. It was losing more and more money every year. And for some reason, the Rothschilds kept it alive, directed its editors to put out these extremely provocative cartoons. And then, boy, they sure hit the jackpot on January 7th. They printed more copies of Charlie Hebdo in the aftermath of that event than any other publication in French history ever had.
Well, the new owners then must have at least broken even.
Oh, yeah, I think they did okay. All those years of taking losses pretty much got recouped all in one fell swoop. Right. And they were also in the position to print up those millions of identical signs reading, "Je suis Charlie." I am Charlie.
Yeah. It looked like that whole thing looked like it was made. It was something that was really geared. There was, you know, a great deal of production went into that overall.
It did, and it was incredibly successful, like 9/11. And, you know, that's another reason to compare this to 9/11, because they both really did mobilize a huge proportion of the population of the target country. You know, in the U.S., Bush's popularity rating shot up from very low, 20% or something, all the way up to 90-plus% due to 9/11. And with the Charlie Hebdo event, millions of people, possibly as many as 5 million people came out into the streets with these Je suis Charlie signs.
Yeah. And it was not as if this was, a fairly quite a highly literate population as well. I should say audience or, group that that responded to this. The idea that free speech could be, shot down quite literally.
That's right.
Something that's very appealing to liberals, in other words.
And the French are relatively well educated, maybe not quite as well now as they used to be, but you have to pass a written exam in philosophy to graduate from high school in France, or at least you did when I was living there in 88, 89.
That's a good idea.
It is a good idea. I think we should institute that here. But they're reasonably good at critical thinking and intellectual activities, more so, I think, than we are. So it is kind of shocking that they're so gullible. But I guess there's a cultural proclivity towards secularism. And so saying that these outsiders who are fanatically religious are coming and doing these terrible things that remind us of the wars of religion 500 years ago strikes a certain chord in the French unconscious and paralyzes their ability to think rationally.
And an overwhelming belief in what they see in the media in a prima facie way.
That's true. That seems to be a disease that's widespread, and it's an epidemic all over the world, people believing the mainstream media. Well, sure, we're doing what we can to inoculate them here at Truth Jihad Radio. And we're just about at the end of the broadcast. So, James Tracy, you're at the Memory Hole blog.
Memoryholeblog.com, and I do a program, Real Politic, that's on Truth Frequency Radio every Monday afternoon from 3 until 4 p.m.
Sounds good. Well, welcome to the alternative education and media business, which is a lot more gratifying than teaching university, although maybe not quite as remunerative, but it's pretty fun. And I congratulate you on continuing to actually educate people in our colleges and universities. So keep up the great work, James Tracy. I look forward to our next conversation.
Okay, Kevin. Thanks for having me. Take care.
We interrupt this program with a special bulletin. This territory is now under martial law. All constitutional rights have been suspended. Stay in your homes. Do not attempt to contact loved ones, insurance agents, or attorneys. Shut up. Do not attempt to think, or depression may occur. Stay in your homes. Curfew is at 7 p.m. sharp after work. Anyone caught outside the gates of their subdivision zones after curfew will be shot. Remain calm. Do not panic. Your neighborhood watch officer will be by to collect urine samples in the morning. Anyone interfering with the collection of urine samples will be shot. We'll be right back.
noises will be inspected for trace elements and new. Anyone failing to display the mandatory black velvet Mexican style paint.